Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Today, we travel through the Olympian Tree of Worlds and arrive at the Temple of the Muses, wellspring of human creativity. And there, I am proud to bring you the Enchanted Self with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. Greeting, Barbara. How are you?
I'm great, Hercules. And how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I've been looking forward to your podcast. I love the topic. Onwards.
Onwards and upwards, yes. After I decided on the topic, which is if you could write your memoir now, what would you be wanting to emphasize or tell other people? After I assigned it, I realized I'm going to do some thinking myself. That's not the easiest topic, but it's a fun topic, and I think I'll just start off. I have two guests, Ming Chen and Francesca Nazzi, and I'm going to let them tell you each about themselves because it's going to fit in so much to their world and what they would say if they were writing a memoir. And I'll just quickly say that one of the chapters that I probably would write in a memoir would be about miracles. And just to give you an example of how this all ties into, in fact, you, Hercules, one of the things that I wished I could have become or done tied into acting, tied into even, believe it or not, is that noise supposed to be there, Hercules?
That noise, yes. It's notifications from Facebook.
Okay. All right.
It's an official bling noise.
Even in college, I did take acting and I did take directing at one point. So these urges have always been in me, but it was through a psychological meeting where I met a lady who was doing public access TV in New York. And I was just, you remember this lovely lady.
Of course.
I had her name. Say that again?
Yes, of course I remember. How can I forget May Eisenberg?
Oh, no, but I'm thinking of Jean Cirillo.
Okay.
Right now, because she was a psychologist, very formal, not at all artsy in my opinion, just a very normal psychologist, and she invited me to be on her public access show, and I was like, I was floating, I was in heaven, and this was a turning point in my possibilities of bringing to life some of my most profound interests of going out to the public in many different ways and levels, which I can talk about later. But I don't want to hold up Ming and Frank introducing themselves. So whoever has the courage next to tell just a tiny bit what you're doing and then maybe jump in with what one of your memoir chapters would really be about.
Frank, you want to start or you want me to start?
You're brave.
Whatever you want to do.
After you, Ming.
Okay. My name is Ming Chen. You might know me from the AMC TV show Comic Book Men, which aired on the AMC network after the Walking Dead. We had 7 seasons and 96 episodes. And it was a reality show that took place at a comic book shop owned by director Kevin Smith. So Kevin's somebody I've been working with since 1996. So I guess this will be 25 years. And I'm also a podcaster, and I run a podcast studio called The Shared Universe. And I've worked with all three of both hosts and the guests in relationship to creating content and podcasts and live streams, and it's pretty much what my life revolves around right now. But I think probably the big major chapter in my life is how I got involved with Kevin Smith. Most of you know him as the guy who wrote and directed Clerks, one of the movies that kicked off the independent film movement. You know him for creating the characters Jay and Silent Bob, and being a real... really good motivator. He's one of the bigger podcasters in the podcast universe right now. He's a writer and director that a lot of people, especially a lot of young filmmakers, look up to as they're starting out as inspiration. But I got involved with him, and this would probably be the biggest chapter in my book, I guess, if I were to write one, was how I met him. I was just a kid in college. I was a big fan of his. And I ended up meeting him just because I was a fan of his movies. I created a fan website when the movie Clerks came out in 1994, and he happened to be at an internet cafe in Red Bank, New Jersey. He ended up seeing it, and I guess he was so blown away by it, by my fandom, that he ended up tracking me down. He gave me a phone call one day and asked if I could work with him. He asked me if I could build more websites for him. And I was just a kid in college who, I was hoping maybe he would just email me one day and say, hey, good job, kid. But instead, he ended up hiring me. So I was in Michigan, had to move to New Jersey. I've been here ever since, and meeting Kevin has led to many, many weird adventures, which will probably be some of the other chapters in my book. But I think that's the big one in terms of the one that I would like to get out there, because I use that to tell kids or anybody out there really that do what you love, follow what you love, and you never know what will happen. Weird stuff definitely happened to me. Good things happened to me for sure.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Well, maybe I hope we'll come back in a few minutes and you'll tell us one of the weird stories, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, Frank, I guess I'm up.
Yeah.
So my name is Francesco Nuzzi. I go by Frank. I am the proud owner and executive producer at Emiliana Film. We are based in New Jersey. I guess my claim to fame, if I could call it that, is I produced a completely independent feature film called Star-Crossed Lovers, which I directed, and it is a modern adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. I've been writing and working with Barbara now for like 3 years, Barbara. I was trying to put the math together. Since you and I started working together. I've gotten to know Ming. Hercules, pleasure to meet you virtually on your phone. What else can I add about myself? This is always the hardest part for me. I always like hearing about other people and just hearing the story that Ming, that you told of how you actually met Kevin Smith, just kind of blew my mind and how that all played out. I'm a director, writer. I love what I do. I love telling stories. I love this idea. And Hercules, you kind of touched upon it too in the beginning that I've always said stories to me are like the foundation of what we are as humans. There's, you know, mm-hmm. it started probably thousands and thousands of years ago as people sat around fires talking about their ancestors and trying to distill these, you know, lessons and moving society forward, moving culture forward. And I feel like as entertainers, you know, to be able to try to express ourselves and continue to push the envelope, I feel like it's the greatest expression that we can do, because we're the most exposed as individuals, especially actors who put their souls out on stage or in film. And then you get into the minds of these writers and directors and see how they view the world. So if I could write a memoir, I mean, I would have chapters and subchapters, but I think really it would start with my kids. My biggest chapter right now would be my kids, Amelia and Liliana. I decided to start the production of Star-Crossed Lovers pretty much as I heard that my wife was expecting. I was like, oh my God, I need to do this, because I figured if I didn't do the project when I started it, I didn't think I would be able to do it at all. And I had worked with this small theater, educational theater in Budlake, New Jersey, called Pox Amicus Castle Shakespeare Rep, and Stan Barber, who is the longtime director there, had cast me when I was fresh out of college in a production that he was putting on. They would do theater for all the schools around New Jersey and Pennsylvania and New York. They would go bus kids in, we would put on a show and perform and then do Q&A. So when I had this opportunity, my last time being at Pox Amicus, I knew I was kind of done with doing that show, especially with my life about to change. So I just pooled my resources. I pulled together cast members from previous years. I talked to as many of my family members to pool as much money as possible, locations. And we shot a feature film in 17 days, all Shakespeare, all wow. original language. And it was really because I knew I had this child on the way. And when my wife and I decided that we wanted to start a family, we kind of both agreed going into it that her job was pretty rock steady, and that once the children started coming along, it would be my responsibility to raise them. So we've been doing that, and now we're almost out of daddy daycare for them, which is great. Getting ready to kind of go back out into the world. COVID didn't help. The whole last year and a half kind of didn't help, but soon I just feel like there's this, you know, new adventure ahead of me. And luckily enough, I've been able to produce a few shorts and work with Barbara the last few years on really honing her stories and ideas. And I just feel blessed and happy to be here. I could say more. I could just go on.
Yeah, sure. Say more. We were having a feedback problem on Barbara's line. So I pulled her into chat very quickly to let her know, you know, so she'll be calling right back in. I guess I'll share my memoirs in the interim. Basically, my life could be summarized in two words, living mythology. And it seems that since I was a small child, I've been fascinated with mythology. And then I have spent a lot of my time trying to find ways to bring that mythology to life and to explore some very basic things about mythology. So I've used different names during my journey. So I feel like I've lived several different lives during the course of this lifetime. When Barbara met me, I was Thor the Barbarian, and I had a cable show in New York City. We started together on Uniquely You Now, which is a show with Dr. Gene Cirillo, who she mentioned, and May Eisenberg, who I mentioned, its claim to fame was that it was spoofed on Saturday Night Live. So people heard about it through there. And I got contacted because I'd written an article about UFOs. And May asked if I'd like to be on her show. So that was my first time on television, other than when the reporter stops you in the street to ask you a question in New York City. And when I arrived at the studio, May was very upset, and because her partner, June Cirillo, was scarfed up by Jenny Jones. So she didn't have a co-star, a co-host. So she asked me if I can do it. So I had no doubt that I could do it. I've never done it before, but I knew I could do it. So that's how I hooked up with Uniquely You Now, and that's how I met Barbara. And that was a phenomenally creative time, not only on Uniquely You Now, but later on we developed each of us our own shows, and then we experimented. And Barbara had perhaps the most creative idea for a show ever, so of course I had to do it. It was me as Thor the Barbarian, Barbara's the Enchantress, and she had a chef from a major New York cooking school. And we were doing like a self-improvement empowerment show, and it was awesome. I had a lot of fun doing that. And we stayed in touch for many years until I moved to Pennsylvania. When I moved back to New Jersey, we started being in touch again, and now a new chapter opens. So I'm very grateful for that. And Barbara's back with us.
That's right. I'm back on my old-fashioned telephone that I almost forget I have.
And there's no feedback. Great.
So is this better?
Oh, it's 100% better. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll know from now on I will use this. So this is interesting because we are obviously all extremely creative people who want to get our messages out there, and I'd say we're in the inspirational field. We're not just looking to be famous, although possibly fame and some income in my case would be very nice. I have my income from seeing clients, but how people make money in the entertainment field, I have yet to quite hook into. But anyway, we're very inspirational. And one of the things that I would like to do is give credit to three different people in my memoir. And the first one, I think, would be my mother, who married at 19 because she didn't want to be either a secretary or a sales lady. And that's all that the patriarch of my mother's family, my Uncle Dave, that's all that he was willing to pay for when she left high school, was some sort of course to become a secretary. And, of course, if she became a department store sales girl, he didn't have to do anything. And everyone in the family knew that my mother was beautiful but dumb. And needless to say, my mother wasn't so happy with my Uncle Dave's suggestions. And when my father came along, they met at a summer resort where my grandmother, great-grandmother had taken her for a week, and fell in love. Certainly he fell in love. I think my mother at 18 wasn't really ready to fall in love in the way we think of it if you're, you know, 25, 30 kind of thing. But she admired him very much, and so she escaped through marriage. What she didn't realize is that my father was a visionary in the field of education. And the first thing he did, but they had been married a year, who knows, early in their marriage, is he gave her an IQ test. And believe, of course, she wasn't dumb. She was very bright. And that was the beginning of my father's visionary work on my mother, encouraging her, helping her to see that she had been underestimated in her family of origin. And when he became a dean at the University of Bridgeport when I was 5 or 6, that was the next step. You know, he said, look, you can go for free at the University of Bridgeport. And I think he did a bit of pushing, and she started her undergraduate. And for me, it was a little bit of a loss because she was out of the house at times when I would have liked her to be home. But she ended up getting a master's in teaching and taught for, I don't know, a good 25 years after that. And needless to say that my father not only tried to influence her, which he succeeded, but constantly influenced me. And didn't really push me in a daily way, like, what's your homework? But he just had a way of convincing people that they had more potential than they were realizing. And he would get up at 6 a.m. and help me type a paper. He was very, very much there. But really, it was his energy of influence. So I think I'll stop right there. If there's time, I'll tell you about Mr. Sylvester, who was the other influencer. But can anyone hook on what I'm saying and maybe come up with a related chapter or something else?
Sure, I'll jump in. So my father moved to the U.S. when he was 26 years old. He came to visit and then wound up staying because he had met my mother and they had fallen in love and pretty much told her, and she was young at the time too. She was about 18, 20, mm-hmm. same age as your mom, Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
So they wound up falling in love and they got married, which allowed him to come live in the States. And, you know, growing up, my father was such a presence. He had this thick accent. He would always, you know, tell me. And I'm the youngest of my family. I have an older brother and two older sisters. And it was always kind of tough because there's such a big age gap between me and my next sibling, Angela. There's 8 years between us, and then there's 11 and then 13 years. So I was kind of the oops child that came along later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I always found myself, you know, trying to, you know, establish my own identity in a way, because I wasn't necessarily treated like the redheaded stepchild, but, you know, the family was already so put together already before I came along and established, and they were doing their own thing, that when I was growing up, I had these, you know, visions of grandeur, which I think allowed me to succeed in the entertainment industry, because half the time growing up, I was by myself because my siblings were either already in college or just graduating high school and wanted nothing mm-hmm. to do with me. So there was a lot of times of me, you know, playing in my basement by myself. But my father would always say, just do your best. That's all he would tell me. He wouldn't tell me, like, what to do, how to be. He would just say, just do your best. And he'd always say, better days are ahead, or better days are coming. And I remember at the time, like, as a kid, just, you know, stupidly just being like, I don't know what you're talking about, and just kind of, you know, pushing aside his advice. And then as I got older, I realized, you know, he was just telling me, because English was not his first language, so we couldn't mm-hmm. articulate exactly what he was trying to enlighten me with through his experience and his life. He did the best he could, and you know, I still love him dearly. And when I finally just, like, and I should preface this. This is a sad chapter. I'm sorry, Barbara. I know you wanted this to be fun, but little sad chapter.
Sure.
You know, right before my father died about a year before my wife and I got married, Jeff and I got married. And, you know, he had known, I've known my wife for, we've been married almost 8 years now, and we've known each other since we were 15 years old. So my father knew her. And in his way, we were on a family vacation. She was with me. She was just my girlfriend at the time. We had been boyfriend, girlfriend, friends. Mm-hmm. And then we were on this trip, and he had already been going through chemo and just going through everything he was going through. And he said, I got the stone for Jeff. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, don't worry, you'll see. He had known a jeweler and had, like, somehow, because he was just like a lunatic like this. Like, he was like, you're going to marry this girl. I know you are. Mm-hmm. And put me, like, on the right path. And it was after that vacation, I was like, you know what, Dad, you're right. And I just appreciate now, and I'm trying to do it with my kids, of just trying to just let them be who they are and let them grow up and nurture them as best as I can, but also give them the freedom to do what they want. And I've kind of taken his old school, like, mentality and his old school wisdom that he was trying to teach me and flipped it into my own verbiage for myself and my kids. I always tell them, I'm like, and I tell myself, be the best version of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I strive for. And I owe that to my dad. And he's like, even though he's gone, he's still teaching me every day.
Wow. Yes, I believe that. Yes. Well, I think you're up, Ming.
I always enjoy stories of parents. My parents are immigrants as well. They moved here in the late '60s to go to school, and they actually met here in the States. They're in different states, but every weekend they would bus the Chinese kids to each other's colleges, and I think that's how they met. And I learned a lot about my parents because I decided to sit down and record podcasts with them. I decided I wanted a record of our interview, and I was like, "Well, I have all this podcast. I have a studio here. Let's podcast with my parents." So the first one I did, I went home and I brought gear with me, and I recorded with my mother, learned a lot about her, and then later on that summer, my dad was here. They were both here, but my dad took over the microphone. I learned a lot about him. And for anybody out there, you know, we're kind of podcasting right now. And if you have an opportunity to podcast with your family members or your mom and dad or, you know, your kids, I highly recommend it. It'll give you an audio record, or if you want to video it as well, you know, it's something that you could potentially have forever and pass it down. But I think the most interesting I learned about that was my parents. I get my both sets of grandparents never met. You know, my dad's grandparents never met my mom before they got married, and my mom's grandparents never met my dad. But in Taiwan, both sets of parents met each other, and I guess they liked each other because they approved of the marriage. But they never met each other's, you know, the husband and the wife before they got married. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yes.
It was a good thing that the two sets of parents liked each other. So, you know, that could have gone the other way, I guess. And luckily it didn't, or I guess I wouldn't be here. So, you know, Asian parents are pretty strict, always very academic forward, and I was, I was the unruly kid that all he wanted to do was read comic books and play video games. And, I try to balance the both, but I think, luckily the love of pop culture won out in my life. It came in very handy later on in life. So there are sometimes I think they have no idea what I do. They probably haven't in the last 20 years. So I sometimes in the back of my head, or maybe sometimes she'll even tell me, I think she wants me to get a real job, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon. But despite all of that, they were very great guides. They instilled a lot of great values in me, I owe my mom a call tonight, so thank you for reminding me.
Okay. Yes. And Hercules, do you want to add anything to this chapter of our show?
Sure. If we're talking about parents, and I was conceived in Greece and I was born here, and my parents are immigrants as well. And I was born when the Sword and Sandal movies were a big thing, when Steve Reeves was Hercules, and that unleashed a lot of mostly Italian-made films that were in theaters, they were on television. So I grew up with that. And the stories that I grew up with by my mom, I'm a Lemnian Greek. That's the island where Jason and Argonauts found the Amazon women.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all those stories about my heritage and about Hercules when he became a god, appeared there first to convince the Philoctetes to give up his bow to Odysseus so he could win the Trojan War. And then I had all these movies playing on TV, and there was a cartoon at the time called The Mighty Hercules. So that was playing at the time too. And then I was sent to parochial school after kindergarten. So I got a very thorough grounding in not only Greek mythology, but history, language, and there were lots of Greek languages. There was a formal Greek language, a modern Greek language, an ancient Greek language, a New Testament language. So there was a lot of information that became a central part of who I am. And although I fought this for part of my life and I tried to extricate myself from it, as I grew older, I found out that just like I rejected some aspects of it, there were some aspects to it that I kept because I found them valuable and they resonated with me. So as I've gotten older, I've begun to realize more and more what a treasure that heritage that I inherited was. And even though I thought I strayed very far from the family tree, I actually didn't. Despite all my hither and yon and all my wide wanderings, in actuality, I never really left the garden of my family, so to speak. So I've come full circle, and my current adventures are framed with that understanding. Before I give up the baton, Ming, my path crossed the comic book men twice, once as Flora the Barbarian and once as Hercules, which is I've used that throughout my entire life. Both times I got papers, I talked to people, and there was one clause on the contract that I wouldn't have changed, and the History Channel changed it for me, but Comic Book Men wouldn't change it for me. So both times I had to decline. It's funny how destinies cross and paths cross. So it's awesome that you're here and that you were associated with that show for very many years found success there and found fulfillment there.
Sometimes fate can't keep people apart. So I'm glad glad eventually got to to create content together.
Amen to that.
So that's just fascinating. And my parents were not born in other places, but I certainly come from a very distinct heritage of Judaism, and although my grandparents and then my parents even further became secularized, those roots are so deep that, you know, they're just in your DNA, the ethnicity and the, you know, the feelings. I feel that oftentimes you actually have inside yourself even emotions that come from experiences that other people had, you know, that are your ancestors. So this is really, really, this is fascinating. I want to try to do one round. I don't know what time is because now I lost my phone. I don't even know where I put it down.
We have 20 minutes or so left.
Okay. I want to do another round, maybe two, but at least one. And this one is around the mentors in your life. And there have been tons of mentors in my life, which I can't even go through. I'll just mention when I was in the third grade, I probably was very dyslexic, and I could not sound out words. That meant nothing to me. And I had a teacher that really saved me, because if by the third grade you can't learn to read, there are big problems. And she said, took me aside one day, and she said, you know, I can see that you cannot sound out words, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to memorize hundreds and hundreds of words, and you will find that eventually you will be just as good a reader as if you could sound them out. So that was the learning disability schooling of years ago, and I did just what she said. And by the end of the year, I was standing up in class reading to the kids while they had their little thing of milk and put their heads down to rest. And she was at, you know, she saved me. My parents, even with all my, and my dad as an educator, they didn't know, couldn't process any of this. So on to a major, major mentor for many years in my life, Mr. Sylvester. And the way Mr. Sylvester entered our lives is the phone rang, my mother answered. He introduced himself that he had been following my father on the Board of Education, where my father was now superintendent of schools in Norwalk, and watching some of the different things that the schools had to deal with. And he was very interested in getting to know my father more. And so he thought that we could all come down to his house for cocktails. My mother was utterly shocked because you just didn't call strangers and invite them for cocktails. But she, you know, she was really full of fun too. So she accepted, and she said, well, there's only three of us, my husband and our daughter who's 16. He said, that's great. Okay. So we went to his house for cocktails, and it was the beginning of this wonderful friendship. He was considered in those days elderly. He was 70, and his wife also. And what happened was that he was friends with all of us, but he was very, very invested in me. And I think because I don't know exactly why. This was nothing like flirtation or anything. This was like just total purity. He was, I guess he sensed, and I probably told him that, you know, I was a very bright girl, sort of on the fringe, even though I appeared popular and stuff, I wasn't really one of the gang. I was very unique in writing poetry and all this stuff that I was into, and complaining about boys and whatever I shared with him. And he had never gone to college. He was self-educated, and he had books from the greatest thinkers of all time, and he just encouraged me, you know, to just be a, go with my, as other people have said tonight, you know, go with my dreams and my energy and go for it in life. So he died when he was 75, and it was a great loss to me, but I did have a bunch of his letters that he had written me. And skipping ahead to actually the pandemic, I had a long letter from him that I really hadn't read probably for 35 years. It was just, up there in the file cabinet. And one night, Russell was already asleep, I took the letter and I read it. And I realized that this guy really knew who I was way beyond anyone else in my world. Not even my parents never knew me like he had figured me out. And the letter was so encouraging toward my future and my whole lifespan. And I started to cry. It was so meaningful and so useful during the pandemic when I felt so suddenly pulled apart from so many of my routines and et cetera, which we've all faced. But I was amazed, and it was almost like finding like a diamond suddenly in your bureau drawer that's, you know, worth more than you can imagine. So that's my story about a mentor.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Ming, you want to go or you want me to go?
I'll go. I mean, I mentioned him like it's a broken record, but Kevin Smith for sure. Definitely, you know, by him contacting me, a fan, I guess he saw something in me, maybe it was my initiative in creating a fan site, or I guess maybe just like the work that I did. But if you look at his history, he's always been a very forward-thinking guy. He started communicating with his fans on the internet way before Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or Amazon or Google even existed. So that's pretty forward. He started podcasting years before anybody else did, and he dragged me into it. I had no intention of being behind a microphone. I had no intention of creating my own content, no intention of being in front of a camera. When I was working with him, I was the guy who would upload his podcast. So it'd be on, you know, iTunes and other distribution services. I was a tech guy, you know, I sat in a dark room, tapping away at keyboards and making sure all his stuff was running. But I think one of the greatest things he ever did was like, hey, he told me he wanted me to start a podcast. And I had many doubts, including, you know, I didn't go to broadcast school. I had no experience behind a microphone. And I was afraid that even if I started, you know, who would listen to me? Who would have any interest in hearing what I had to say? And he convinced me, he's like, listen, if you start podcasting and you talk about the things that you love, that you will find your audience of like-minded people who also love the same things that you do. So, but he really had to drag me into it, and thank goodness he did, because it's pretty much what I do 24/7 now. But something I truly love, it's something I've truly done and loved over the last 11 years. And I don't know if I would have done it if he had not encouraged me to. Working with him, you know, just so many crazy things happen. And
tell us one of them.
He's the type of guy that is like, hey, you know, I think I want you to build me a rocket ship and go to the moon. You know, I would probably figure out a way to do it. It's just he's a motivator. He's an instigator, and he's definitely a mentor for sure. So, I'm not a guy who aspired to be in front of the camera or on TV or in movies, but he's thrown me in front of it multiple times, and it's been a lot of fun. So, that's not even restricted to me. That guy's pretty much motivated everybody. to, you know, to going forth and doing what they love, whether it be film or writing or anything creative, really. And I like how he's always willing to help other people out and, you know, hoping that they get to the level that he has gotten. And I'll always thank him for that.
Wow.
So I guess in a way you're saying that everything about him was close to the edge of miracles. There isn't necessarily one quirky story, but it's just all amazing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and you know, I try to pass on his message to other people. You know, if people ever ask me for advice, I was like, listen, I learned from the best. You know, I worked with the best, and this is what he told me. He told me, you know, find out what you love to do, and try to do it all the time. Try to make a living out of it, and you know, then it won't seem so much like work. And you know, when you do what you love, you work very, very hard at it, and mm-hmm. you know, the success will find you. And I was like, wow, he's right. That's yeah, he's completely right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I'm sold. I never
All
really
right.
had like a mentor in my life. I've had many teachers, but like no one that like I can say is like really taken me under their wing to kind of show me the way, like a Jedi master mm-hmm. to me, the Padawan learner. But I have had so many great teachers throughout my life, and I go as far back as, I mean, of course, my parents. Like, first and foremost, my parents. And I spoke about my father before. But Mr. Brennan in Northern Highlands Regional High School, he was the TVP teacher there. He probably wouldn't even believe that I just mentioned his name right now because I haven't talked to him in forever since, like, high school. But he was such a great teacher and really showed me the behind-the-scenes work of, like, what it takes to produce a television show. That was like my first experience and insight into what it took to shoot something, throw it in the editing bay, add a, you know, lower third, and what cuts would look like, what angles you needed. And then unfortunately, it's funny, like I kind of went backwards in my life where I had this love for film and television growing up just from watching amazing movies. I was such a movie junkie, but I never really saw it as an avenue for me in terms of a career when I was younger. I just saw it as merely entertainment. And I still do. I still love just consuming as much as I can. And I'm going to say, like, all these other filmmakers that are out there, I know it's cliche, but like they're all teachers to someone like me who watches their work and appreciates the stories they tell and how they tell their stories, because different styles, I mean, from Kevin Smith's style of filmmaking, his types of movies, to, you know, you just look at like The Gambit. Like, I'm trying to watch Tenet right now, and my mind, that's from Christopher Nolan, my mind is just melting trying to keep up with this movie. Between his style, Guillermo del Toro, Peter Jackson, I mean, Steven Spielberg, the list goes on and on. But to me, like, they're all kind of mentors, but like really just teachers, because it kind of paved the way of saying, like, here's how you can make a film in all different facets. And like Ming just said earlier, in this industry, and I'm starting to really learn it, is you can't look out and seek your audience. Your audience is going to seek you. Like, they're going to find you. If you just stick to the stories you want to tell and what you want to say, then your audience will gravitate towards you. And then in college, Patricia Hawkridge was my main acting teacher in college. I went to Salve Regina University, little school in Rhode Island, and my first experience on stage was in a production of Romeo and Juliet. I'm sorry, not Romeo and Juliet. A Midsummer Night's Dream. And Greg Gere, who was my first director, was another teacher for me. I think at our first read-through, I couldn't say a lick of Shakespearean dialogue at all. I had no experience with it before. I never did theater in high school. I never did it in middle school. I cheated my way pretty much through like all English lit classes in high school. I was like the prototypical just sport, you know, going after girls, total I was about to say, I don't know if I can curse on here. I'm not going to. I was an SHIT head. But I was just into, like, not anything that fulfilled me, really. Soccer did for a long time. But then I just started falling in love with, like, performing and just getting, you know, myself out there, my stories out there. And then Stan Barber, who I mentioned earlier, ran Poxomicus, still does run it. He was another great teacher for me. And then Patrick Qualiano in Stella Adler, it's a big acting school in New York City. He showed me so much of like what it means to go inside of yourself and, you know, really just really expose your soul to the world and be okay doing it and just letting the art kind of come out. So I've just had so many teachers, but I can't say like really a mentor. And then honestly,
well, that's all right. So God bless you with a ton of them.
I was going to say one more. Ming, literally what you said about like Kevin and like your whole experience during this whole conversation, like I've had ideas in my head for doing a podcast, and now by golly, I'm like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And on that point, we have around 7 minutes left, and I'd like everybody to have a chance to share their contact information.
Okay, well, I will be back hopefully in a month on Hercules Show. I'm Barbara Holstein, and you can write to me at barbara.holstein@gmail.com. And whatever seems appropriate and we have in common, I'll be glad to answer. And I'm a psychologist as well as a filmmaker and an author and even a playwright. So I'm versatile, and I've enjoyed this evening very much.
Me too.
Go ahead.
You can find me online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, at MingChen37. That's MingChen37. And our podcast studio is called A Shared Universe, and that can be found at ashareduniverse.com or at A Shared Universe on any social media for sure. And if you're interested in watching Comic Book Men, all 7 seasons are streaming on Amazon Prime Video right now, so you can check that out. If you want to watch that.
You can find me, Francesco Nuzzi, online. My handle is at Nuzzi by Nature, not because I hate you. It's just been an old thing that stuck. Nuzzi at Nature, or Nuzzi by Nature. Ugh. I'm not good at this stuff. I'm too old for this. my production company is Emiliana Films, if you want to check out kind of the stuff I do. And Star-Crossed Lovers can be found on Amazon Prime or Vimeo Pro. Check it out. Would appreciate it. And that's about it for me.
Wow. Thank you to everybody. This was a great show. You've all given me lots of things to think about, and I'm looking forward to all of you being together again very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks,
great.
Thank you, guys.
This was great.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in tonight, whether you're listening live as we speak or whether you're going to visit us later on demand. From all of us, all of you, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We're going to close with If You Can Dream, because it seems appropriate, by one of our contributors, Virginia Ackley.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream. Dream.